Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, April 28th, 2016. A lot of topics to cover tonight. The main science topic, I'll be giving a international radiation report. Now, this is going to be, the 1 hour is too short to cover this topic, but I'll try and hit the big points just to give you a feeling for where this is at. First of all, I'm going to start off by mentioning they say you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Well, I'll tell you, I have been studying some things lately, and that is modern internet, all kinds of issues dealing with managing the internet in the modern world. And, of course, I have a pretty serious background in computer science. I was the head of a computer science department at a university for a couple of years. I created coursework. I wrote the first test, a standardized test for computer science with a group of other university professors, and we wrote the first standardized test for computer science for the university level. I worked for 25 years in the telecommunications industry. 10 of those years were as a high-level principals engineer, a senior systems engineer, writing specifications. I wasn't a programmer. I was never a programmer, so please understand that. But writing high-level functional specifications, hardware specifications, software specifications for IBM-compatible mainframe telecommunications processors, including encryption, a lot of issues. So computing is something I happen to know a little bit about. But like anything, times change, and there's a whole new genre of computer techniques, lingo. And so anyway, I'm boring into this, and like I say, this proves you can teach an old dog new tricks. This radiation report comes on the heels of Earth Day, and I put a little posting on my center column of my homepage called Picture of the Day, and there's a picture there, I think it's, yeah, it should still be there, of a kid's, now this is probably, you know, first, second, third grade kids, Earth Day kind of poster. It's kind of like a little to-do thing. And it talks about recycling and the 10 things you can do to make Earth Day, you know, Earth Day is what it says. And I'm looking at this and I'm going, you know, what are they teaching these kids? Literally nothing. Earth Day is like this goody gumdrop. You know, everything is wonderful. Disney World, lollipops and roses world. And, you know, we're all supposed to love the Earth. And on Earth Day, we commemorate Earth. And not a word, a single word, about the deplorable condition of this planet. Anyway, and one of the worst things on this planet is radiation. Digging up inert material out of the ground, which really by itself just out there spread all over the place, uranium, etc., is not a problem. It doesn't, I mean, cows graze on it. You know, you're not getting, you know, cows lit up with uranium, but you take that in vast quantities, and what you have to do, for example, to get uranium is it's in high concentrations in, say, rock or things like that. But now they're getting it from surface mining the earth, and so they take like a third of the state of Oregon. They're going to strip mine it. They're going to destroy a third of a state. And this is by Hillary Clinton, of course, selling it to Russia under the table. And that's what that whole deal up in Oregon is all about. And those guys walked into a hornet's nest, not understanding. And now we all know what's going on. But anyway, Earth Day, what a farce. Now, Earth Day itself, I have to honor the founders, the people that started Earth Day, and the intention, but as with all good things, it gets infiltrated, twisted, and turned into something goofy. And that's what's happened to Earth Day, and especially for kids. Earth is in serious trouble, and I'm going to be talking about that in We've had the severe wars before, all caused by the bankers. We've had, other severe conditions before, heavy pollution in the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, where they just burned coal and peat, highly contaminating, high energy content fuels, burning them. And the Earth somewhat recovered from those. And after 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, the water systems recover, clean out, etc. But nuclear radiation, the Earth ain't going to get over it. Okay, so I'll stop talking about that. Last week I talked about water storage. I encourage you to go listen to that show. It's very important. The ability to store water in sealed, closed containers. And especially when it comes to radiation. And I had some good feedback from listeners, and I'll be reading some of that. By the way, my master's degree in physics is in nuclear and solid-state physics. So nuclear physics and the issues of nuclear science, it's something I happen to know a bit about. Not to mention, let's go back, close to 15 years. I was a regular guest on many, many radio shows. Of course, back through the 90s on Coast to Coast AM with the original Art Bell Show. We used to do Christmas specials, Art and myself. And so then it's when Nori took over Coast to Coast AM. I did a lot of shows. One time, Lisa Lyons talked to me on the phone, the producer up there in Oregon. She said, you have more appearances on Coast to Coast than Richard Hoagland. And I said, what? And I said, that couldn't even be possible. Nobody could have more appearances than Richard Hoagland. She said, yeah, you do. You have literally more appearances on Coast to Coast than Richard Hoagland. And that surprised me, but I used to be on there all the time. Not so much anymore. But anyway, just mentioning that because of the number of radio shows that I've been on, not to mention my own radio show, but back around, let's take it back to the early 2000s, I was a guest on a show by a guy named Alex Merklinger, who almost got the position that George Norrie has on Coast to Coast. And, of course, a lot of people were vying for that when Art went away. But Alex almost got the position. But anyway, I was on Alex Merklinger's show many, many, many times. I don't know how many times, a lot of times for three-hour interviews. And one of the topics we covered back then was chemtrail spraying, weather modification, and other topics related to that. So I was in that field long before anybody that you see out there, the Dane Wigingtons or any of the people that are currently in that now, I was in that field and talking about it long before anybody else decided to come out from behind the magic curtain. So anyway, it is something I know a little bit about. But here's my point. The climate change, chemtrail, geoengineering groups have been highly infiltrated. There's a lot of, just infiltration. What that means is the government, the disinformation crews, have gotten in there, and then they come down, and then they make a 90-degree turn. And I'm not going to go into it any more than that, that once one of these fields like ufology, the study of UFOs, the MUFON, highly infiltrated, the disclosure program, highly infiltrated. Anytime one of these groups gets up and running, the green movement, Greenpeace, I mean, you name it, they get infiltrated and then they make a 90-degree turn and it turns into something goofy and they start. And a lot of times, very much well-intentioned, the people that are in the group are running down the road and they're doing this and they're, and unfortunately, in the green movement, I've always said there's nobody that's more easily fooled than a tree hugger. And actually, I consider myself, in a manner of speaking, a tree hugger. but I'm not easily fooled because they can be manipulated because of emotion. That's the problem. And they grab onto something and they start marching and they don't know that they're being manipulated. And that's what's going on in the climate change, chemtrail, geoengineering groups that started with good intentions. But at any rate, I wanted to read a couple items from listener emails here. This is somewhat of a preface to the topic of radiation. But first of all, just a little bit, maybe kind of an advertisement. My water filters, my books, everything, I've been kind of upgrading my sales page a little bit. And just want to remind you that it's there. That supports this show, which is commercial free. And a lot of other things that have to happen in the background. So, and then plus you get world-class products. There's nobody, I always say that I don't have competition in my water filter products or in my books, in my CDs, DVDs, the stuff I have on my page. A woman told me a couple of weeks ago, I was talking to a customer, and she goes, you know, you could sell so many things there, important things. And I go, yeah, I could, but I don't. Because I concentrate and I do very well at what I do. And sometimes when you expand too much, it's like the hardware store, you get too much stuff going and then you lose sight of the things that you do well. My water filter products, world class. There is nothing, there is no product line that matches my water filters, the GF filters with the national certification, sold in all 50 states, etc. Okay. Go to the webpage, jmccsci.com, click down into the sales page, and you get great products, and it helps me out. Okay, enough of that. So let me go to a couple listener topics here. This was sent in by a listener, and actually it's a report done by a guy named John Rappaport. And I've been on John's show, did some great interview work there, him interviewing me. And so, he's got really some amazing research that he comes out with. He's the one that really broke the story on the Zika virus and then corrected it and did some major corrections after it was out and running. So, but anyway, the current story, this is from April 27th, John Rappaport. It's called Fluorides, the Atomic Bomb and a Spy. This is interesting because this comes out of an article that was actually published during World War II when the atomic bomb was being developed. And, of course, they were developing plutonium from uranium, and the uranium had to be processed. But part of the process included fluoride. And so it goes all the way back to then. Here's another article. It says, Fluoride Teeth and the Atomic Bomb. And so this was an article that Joel Griffith from 1997, it says, that it was supposed to be published in the Christian Science Monitor, but it never was. But anyway, it talks about how back during the World War II era, the government anticipated, because of the workers having to work with fluoride, and, you know, they're in an environment certainly not the kind of standards that we would have today with OSHA for workers, etc. So they have these thousands of workers involved in cleaning and processing uranium. And that was remembered. Now, this is a big problem down in St. Louis where they just took the trailings and dumped them out in a watershed and then covered it with dirt and then poured garbage on the top. Well, it's coming back to roost right now. But anyway, going back to World War II, the atomic bomb, teeth, and fluoride, that's when the government realized that fluoride, not uranium, not plutonium, fluoride would be the thing that would cause lawsuits and basically destruction of the central nervous system, the CNS, of the workforce. So they prepared, they said, they went to the scientists and they said, you have to prepare a report for us stating that fluoride is not harmful. One of the scientists in that effort came out and said, hey, why don't we say, do this, say that it's good for teeth? And then, as further research surfaced during the decades following World War II and the bomb program, etc., every time a serious study came up showing that fluoride was detrimental to the central nervous system, in comes the same guy, this same guy from World War II, and he goes, hey, we should promote this as being good for your teeth. So that's where fluoride in toothpaste came from. It literally came out of the uranium processing facilities of World War II, the government trying to put a lid on lawsuits and trying to make everybody feel touchy-feely good about fluoride, that it's not a problem, when all along they knew it was. And there's the studies are coming out that they made. But anyway, I'm not going to go through this whole thing, but I encourage you, go to John Rappaport's webpage. It's called John Rappaport, Rappo with two P's, O, Port, .wordpress.com is his webpage, and check it out. But very important, and being a person that's involved in water health and filtration and taking fluoride out of water, which my filter elements do, all of them do, this is a very important story. So I applaud John for once again spearheading this article and getting it out there where, in front of the public, where no man basically treads these days. And being out there, kind of the digging up this information. So anyway, my hats off to John there, doing a good job. Here's a story that came in from a listener. More than 90% of the Great Barrier Reef has been hit by severe coral bleaching. Now, this is a story that is being passed around, but then at the very end, they're saying over 50% of the coral is already dead or dying, and they call it pre-bleaching or bleaching, and they're claiming it is caused by El Nino, a strong El Nino season, or global warming, the journal Science. It's Fukushima. Fukushima is killing the Pacific Ocean. The Australian Research Council Center for Excellence for Coral Reef Studies confirms they've never seen anything like this before. And they claim that at the final word, it comes out, that magic word, global warming. No, this is Fukushima killing the Pacific Ocean. Supposedly El Nino has been going on for forever. It was in the Middle Ages, in the 1500s, 1600s, the fishermen on the west coast of the Pacific were identifying with El Nino winter. So it's not something caused by global warming. That is fairy tale science. Fukushima, the poisoning of the Pacific Ocean. I've gotten reports back from Hawaii. People are not watching whales these days on the Hawaiian coasts. They're counting dead whales. That's the sport now in Hawaii. If you want to go to Hawaii, don't go to watch the whales out there breaching and spouting. Go there to count dead whales. The Pacific Ocean up along the Canadian border, the Canadian Northwest, all the way up to Alaska, all the way down the West Coast, pretty much dead from Fukushima. And Fukushima is now, the waters are rising over a barrier that they built and spilling into the Pacific Ocean. Japan is just in very terrible condition. So at any rate, by the way, I want to mention again, I already talked about this before, that the 60 or so earthquakes that occurred around the globe, including the big one in Ecuador and the two big ones in Japan, my estimate is that those are man-made. And then congressmen are coming out and saying, be prepared, United States. There's going to be a lot of big earthquakes in the United States this summer. There's no scientific precedence for that. There's no scientific justification for saying that. Why are senators and other people coming out and saying this? There's no scientific basis for saying anything like that. So at any rate, very strange behavior. And the only reason you could make such a prediction, if it's well known that we're going to have man-made earthquakes. So anyway, I'm going to start off my discussion of radiation tonight by basically paraphrasing a letter that I wrote to a listener who wrote in and wanted to know what would be better for removing radiation, whether it be a gravity filter or an inline filter, etc. And this is my response, and it's kind of indicative. You have to understand about ionizing radiation. How does it act? How does it travel? How does it get to where it's going? And once it gets there, how do you get it out of your water system, etc.? So it says, I'm going, thanks to this listener. And I say, and remember, I'm trying to talk about water filtration, but this gets into a lot of other issues about nuclear pollution. I say, just a note on demand, on on-demand filters and radiation. Some people claim to remove radiation in on-demand filters, and of course, these are the inline pressurized in your waterline filtration containers. Some people out there, there's some companies claiming they remove radiation. I sell those types of filters. I have the GF filters in mine, which are much better, but I also don't make the claim that they remove radiation, and I'm going to explain why here. The gravitational filters with the pre-filter is the only good way to get rid of radiation. I'm going to go into this in detail. So at any rate, just preface it so you understand where this is coming from. I said, this is a myth that inline filters remove radiation. First of all, they have no test or legitimate test that can say this is so. Here is the final word on radiation filtration, and this comes from not only myself, but government documentation going all the way back to the civil defense era back in the 1950s, and my own knowledge of the subject. My master's degree is in nuclear and solid-state physics, so it's something I know a little bit about. Radiation likes to attach to things like dust and other impurities. By itself, radiation comes out in a few forms: small microscopic particles and atomic forms, which also attach to other things like dust. In Fukushima, the radiation is blowing up into the atmosphere as atomic forms. The original blasts, this is talking about Fukushima, the original blast blew literally tons of radiation into the air and into the USA, where they measured in cow's milk totally to cover in cow's milk totally a cover up in the USA. So when radiation blows in from Fukushima these days from Japan, it is riding along dust that probably originated in China, where huge dust storms occur blowing our way. Following the jet streams and the rivers of water, airborne water streams in the upper troposphere of our atmosphere that are evaporated off the Pacific Ocean and which provide the majority of fresh rainwater to the northern hemisphere, but it also is laden with radiation from Fukushima. And I'll be talking a little bit more about Fukushima later on, but there was 10 times as much evaporated nuclear powder from Fukushima as Chernobyl, if you can imagine that. 10 times as much. Okay, and I'll be talking about that later, so I'm going to continue my explanation to this listener. Now add in the 100 or so nuclear power plants in the USA that are leaking, and but now about filtration. An inline pressure on-demand system will not filter radiation. They may filter some at first, but the problem is that it is being filtered, not removed by chemical adhesion. So in the pressure system, the radiation will eventually break free and flow into your water. That is why my pre-filter for the gravity feed water filters is the only sure way to filter radiation. In the 1950s, the USA Civil Defense studied radiation and how to filter in case of nuclear attack. What they came up with was a crude pre-filter. You took dirt, and then I have in parentheses, they never really said where you were going to get clean radiation-free dirt after a nuclear attack, but That's your government for you. They forgot to do a field test, is what it's called. Anyway, I'll continue reading. Take a bucket, punch a hole, some small drain holes in the bottom of the bucket, and put in a T-shirt. Then your clean dirt goes in after that. Clean in quotation marks, because where are you going to get clean dirt after a nuclear attack, boys and girls? Anyway, now pour your water into this bucket. This will remove the radiation. Change the dirt regularly. They also did not mention all the bacteria and viruses and ecobacteria, etc., that would come out of this ground coffee, but I guess they consider that better than drinking radiation. Now fast forward to 2008. I was researching field testing my water filters in Iowa during the Midwest floods in 2008. I had my own line of filters, and I took some other brands like the, I won't say the brand names, which I once sold but stopped selling because of serious defects in that filter. By pouring the water, the flood waters directly into the filters, I realized that the other brand plugged within seconds and the rough surface could not be cleaned. It did not work at all. My ceramic filters in either the plastic or stainless containers worked very well, and you could could be recleaned many, many times by simply rubbing the filter element with a soft plastic Scotch-Brite pad. But the inside of the top filter housing became a mess because the gunk built up, and how do you clean it if you don't have fresh water? Thus, the JMCC water filter's universal chem radiation oil pre-filter was born. The plastic housings were made and the system set up with medical and food-grade powders, repackaged, etc., and manufactured. We built these kits in our own warehouse and then shipped them, as we do to this day. Also, there is an accessory set that replaces the spendable materials in the pre-filter. The dirt was in the civil defense model of this. The dirt was replaced with food medical grade powders that would do a better job than dirt, and most importantly, do not leach anything into the water. And so the powders are very inexpensive. And let me see. My screen moved here. The problem with the inline filters is that the radiation is literally contaminating the filters, and eventually that radiation is going to break free and end up in your water guaranteed. So inline filters are not for removing radiation. A simple lab test where the initial result is removal of radiation is a false test, because in a day or two that same radiation is, one, contaminating your filter, and two, will eventually break free and end up in your faucet. That is why we say that inline or on-demand filters are not for emergency, because also you would not have water pressure in the case of emergency, so they wouldn't work at all. But anyway, this gives you an idea about radiation filtration, and how radiation acts. Now, the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, on the national level, just shut down over 100 sensors across the country. They did this because the level of radiation in the United States is horrendous. Now, let me talk a little bit about a case that's being publicized widely today in the United States, Hanford, Washington, the state of Washington. Hanford Power Plant, it's a nuclear power plant, and it has leaked from the storage liquid, has leaked from storage containers. And these are storage containers that are meant to hold this forever. And they don't have any place to put this. The containers are breaking down internally. So the water is coming out, and the fan wrote in and said that he used to work at this in that area, and that 3,000 gallons had slipped through this tank into the environment. 3,000 gallons of highly radioactive toxic liquid polluting the groundwater. We're seeing case after case after case where the Environmental Protection Agency has totally failed to protect the public and demand specifications. They've been talking about this Hanford site for a very long time, and trying to come up with solutions, but then it just gets tabled and nobody does anything. And that seems to be the case in exactly what's going on in Fukushima. I'll talk a little bit about Wikipedia, the disinformation encyclopedia. But in Wikipedia, they claim that only two people died from Fukushima. And I'm going, oh my goodness, what are these people smoking? Two people died at Fukushima? I mean, it's beyond absurd. Fukushima, reactor number 3, had 600,000 spent fuel rods. Now, let me give you a little bit of statistic, because we all know about Chernobyl in Russia having the nuclear accident. Fukushima has 10 times the amount of nuclear waste. This is the dry fuel rod waste that has to be stored at the nuclear power plant. And these were up on the roofs of the Fukushima Daiichi plants. And they put them on the roofs because that's where the cooling air comes out, and they can cool them by secondary air draft coming off the nuclear reactors. When the nuclear reactor melted down, those 600,000 fuel rods turned into vapor. Extremely small dust down to atomic level nuclear radiation. Now, the way you measure radiation, you look for tracers, because you know that those fuel rods had a whole spectrum, possibly 200 different species of nuclear radioactive materials. So you don't have to look for all 200. You only have to look for strontium or cesium or one of the other trace elements that you know is there. And then all you have to do is look for those. And then you know that all of the other ones are also there. So that's how you test for radiation. And you can, if you want to get a little fancy, you could pick out 3 or 4 more of the species and test for those. And when they come out in the right proportion, you know you're looking at Fukushima, which is going to have a different spectrum of percentages of those particular trace elements than, say, another site. Now let's come over to the United States. The United States has over 100 active nuclear power plants. In my discussion about the wing generator, I talk about Chernobyl, I talk about Fukushima, and I talk about Three Mile Island. All major nuclear disasters. 57 of the 80 nuclear disasters, a full 60%, plus 60%, of nuclear accidents have been in the United States. Nobody is talking about that. It's very much hidden from view. But the more critical issue, let me just mention also in that video about the wing generator, I talked about the San Onofre radioactive catastrophe that happened in this north of San Diego, a very large scale, very big nuclear reactor there. When you drive down the freeway, you can see it. I've been by that thing. It's humongous. Had to shut it down, and they won't tell why. They won't say what happened there. It's been shut down. $5 billion to decommission that one nuclear power plant. And it's going to be in process for decades to try and decommission that plant. But we don't even know what happened there. But in the United States, over 100 nuclear reactors, over 100 of them are leaking. Not just the Hanford site. And I almost think they're putting that much emphasis on the Hanford site because it's up in Oregon. And most people think, oh, that's way up there, doesn't bother me, I'll go to sleep, eat my steak tonight, and life is good. Let me tell you, boys and girls, if you have a nuclear power plant near you, and you all do, because when they start polluting, they can pollute hundreds of square miles in an afternoon. When they start polluting, they are going to pollute a very significant part of the United States. And all it takes is one of them. that San Onofre site, for example, was in a critical position because down in San Diego, when the winds blow in off the ocean, off the Pacific, they're going to take that radioactive contamination and blow it literally all over the United States for a very long period of time. We don't know the levels of contamination. There's other sites in Florida. There's sites in Biscayne Bay, 60,000 times radiation level in Biscayne Bay in Florida. This is disaster staring us in the eye. And nuclear radiation doesn't go away. It doesn't get dissolved. It doesn't, it's not like other things that eventually get absorbed, like the carbon-based fuels. So anyway, as a result of preparing for this show, I went on the internet and I said, I want to see today, April 28th, 2016, what the major, organizations are saying about Fukushima, etc. I go online. The very top article is World Health Organization. And it's an article from 2011. And it says, there's no problem with Fukushima. It's contained. Japanese are very confident. They said it won't ever affect Tokyo. And, just complete lies. But the most recent article on Fukushima from the World Health Organization is 2011. And right at the top, I thought, could this be? Is there something wrong here? Right at the top of the page, guess what it says? It says World Health Organization Day. It was like the World Health Organization World Immunization Week they were promoting. In other words, everybody in the world says to run out and get an injection of some kind of vaccine. Oh my goodness, these people are so corrupt. But that just shows that this is the current state-of-the-art article being published by the World Health Organization, an article literally from 2011. Now, the Fukushima disaster was March 16, 2011. So the official World Health Organization article dealing with the Fukushima issue was written shortly thereafter. It was known at the time that Fukushima was an international disaster because of the 600,000, now imagine, 600,000 spent fuel rods going up in vaporizing into the atmosphere. Within weeks, cow's milk in Oregon and Washington State were registering with Geiger counters, were registering radiation. The official story that has come down and which has to be promoted by the Standard Press is that anything that happens from death in the Pacific Ocean, mass die-offs of sea lions or birds or animals or crayfish, whatever, salmon, whatever it is due to global warming. The corruption in science today is staggering. Yet those scientists know that if they don't say it, hey, they're going to be out of a job. They're going to be trying to find a job at McDonald's hamburger stand, and somebody else will be in their position and say it. So they just shut up and say it. And I don't know if maybe they believe it. I can't even imagine what's going through these people's brains. But I'm sure there's some of them that in the back of their mind know that it's a complete lie, but are saying it just to get their paycheck and their retirement and hoping they can get out of there before anybody notices. Okay, now another area of nuclear disaster, which is rarely talked about because we all think about on land and nuclear reactors, these big domed buildings that you see, and the cooling towers, etc., or what you see on land, very few people talk about the shipping industry or the military, where they are literally dumping spent nuclear reactors and spent fuel rods in the ocean. They're dumping this literally in the ocean.
And they go out. They say, okay, here we go. Boom. They dump it, and end of story. But it's not the end of the story. That radiation is taking its toll, and it's going to be there forever. And there's no way to clean it up. If someday we come along with a solution for cleaning up the nuclear waste, then there's a possibility of getting that stuff, putting it in a container, maybe shipping it off to the sun or something. But now there are solutions that can be had at Fukushima. And something I talked on, I've been a guest on various radio shows talking about this subject. But there are neutron flux absorbers. These materials are well known. And so what you would have to do on a large scale is drill down with a whole bunch of basically rods of these neutron absorbers and basically slow down the nuclear reactor, the meltdown, which is still going on under Fukushima. And what they're doing is they're pouring water into it. Well, where do you think that water goes? It's got to go somewhere. And the 600,000 fuel rods have already evaporated. They're gone. They're up in the atmosphere. They're all already come down as fallout into the United States, Europe, Russia, China, every place in the Northern Hemisphere has gotten a good dose of Fukushima radiation, but the majority of it ended up in the Pacific Ocean because fallout doesn't last long in the atmosphere. If it gets up high enough, it will ride those stratospheric winds up in the upper stratosphere, the jet streams basically, that will ride those for a very long way and then fall out. And then it comes down in the rain or in the snow. Remember that snow is worse than rain because snow goes up, the moisture goes up high in the clouds, and the snow crystals form around small dust particles. And so what's going on there? Let me explain how snowflakes form. They are in the electric field of the upper atmosphere, and they need that electric field to form. It's very well known. It's in my work. I talked about this, by the way, in my book, Calculate Primes, about snowflake formation, because it turns out that snowflakes are six-sided and very much related to the prime numbers. But that's another complete story. But the snow comes down with a dust particle in every snowflake. So that beautiful white snow out there, when it starts piling up, has nuclear radiation dust in a lot of it in its core, the seed that started that snowflake. And so winter is a very bad time for radiation poisoning because what happens, it builds up and it builds up and it builds up. And then all of a sudden one day in the spring, hey, it all melts. And it goes soaking down into the ground and going down the river. And, then it's going in a high concentration. It's very concentrated at that point. But the shipping and the military nuclear disasters, there have been a lot of cases where both the U.S. and Russia, and I'm not sure about the reports from China, but nuclear-powered submarines and other vessels, naval vessels, have had problems with their nuclear reactors, a bad design, a design flaw, or something like that. And they take those things and they just dump them overboard. That's what they do with them. So the world is being polluted at the nuclear level, and nobody wants to talk about it. There have been over 100 major nuclear disasters in the world to date with nuclear power. And the United States is in for a bruising. You have Obama who wants to shut down coal-fired power plants. And when you look at it environmentally, you know, when you look at a coal plant, very little smoke or pollution is coming out of the smokestacks. They have the scrubbers, the technology down to where they're doing a fairly good job. And I don't like coal at all. But if you put coal next to nuclear, I would take coal 7 days a week and nuclear 0 days of the week. Because nuclear is going to kill this planet. It's already killing it. When you kill the Pacific Ocean, when you kill the Great Barrier Reef in Australia, these are they're irreplaceable. Those things will never come back. They're killing off the species that have been living there for literally not even millions of years, in some cases possibly billions of years, that have been living in those barrier reefs. So you're killing off those species. They're not coming back, boys and girls. It's 50% to 80% dead right now, and it's going. It's going to be gone. I know people that have gone there swimming, and they say there's nothing there. The fish are dead. They're gone. The report from Hawaii, people counting dead whales. And, you know, the leadership is not touching this with a 10-foot pole. Anyway, that's why I'm doing this, talking about that, this on this radio show. It's a horrific problem. It's not being dealt with. There are solutions. But also, if you just used a third less electricity, which everybody could easily do, including industry, and also getting the wing generator online, which is, by the way, being worked in the background. It's taking a while because of funding issues, basically. And start replacing nuclear power plants first. But Obama wants to push reliance on nuclear power. Now, let me tell you how ridiculous that is. About 28% of our electricity is generated in nuclear power plants. Probably about 50% of our electricity nationwide, United States, is produced in coal plants. And the rest is produced by other forms like natural gas or oil or fuel oil, other forms of, as far as green energy, solar or wind power, is really a microscopic proportion. It's less than 1% is produced with all of the other alternative forms of energy. Canada has hydro, which is a good form of energy, but it's expensive, very costly to build the infrastructure. So, at any rate, back to nuclear power. How can you force a country like the United States onto nuclear power when we only have capacity to produce 25 to 28% of our energy needs with nuclear reactors, and they're not building anymore, they're not going to build anymore. There's a couple of them that are on the drawing board, but nuclear power, and then also finding the fuel. They're decommissioning warheads to produce the fuel to burn in these aging nuclear reactors. They were never meant to build. The reactors that are in the United States are old, outdated reactors. They were never meant to burn high octane nuclear fuel. And so that's causing a demise of these reactors much sooner. So there's no way to force the United States onto nuclear power. We should shut them down one by one, start the decommissioning process, go strictly to coal, and then migrate to the wing generator power with redistributed energy, distribution of energy, as I talk about in the wing generator book, World Energy Project, and completely get away from coal. Maybe in the next 20 years it could be done. But the current banker-owned leadership, if you want to call them that, they're not leaders, they're destroyers, want to force the United States, and Japan now is turning on, it shut down 23 nuclear reactors after Fukushima. Japan shut down its entire fleet of nuclear reactors. They're starting them up again. This is absolutely insane. And by the way, those two recent earthquakes had other issues with nuclear power plants. So Japan sits on a fault line. I mean, it's going to have earthquakes all over, and they have 23 nuclear reactors on the west side of the Pacific Ocean. So if those babies go, guess who gets it? The United States. We have a vested interest in keeping China and Japan, you know, the two industrialized powers in the Western Pacific, from having nuclear power at all. It's absolutely absurd. So anyway, this is a short discussion. Like I say, I could go on for a long time talking about particular nuclear accidents, going through some of the major ones, and then also some of the plants that were used for nuclear processing have had disasters. And so anyway, it's coming at it from all directions. But this issue up in Oregon is over uranium. The Uranium One Corporation, which was a Canadian LLC, which was then resold to Russia, and then that's what they're doing to secure the uranium rights up in Oregon. This is what was done through paying backdoor payments to Hillary Clinton when she was Secretary of State to sell that uranium in Oregon to Russia and kick these ranchers off their land. That's what it's all about. It's well known now that the Clintons were taking kickbacks. Both Billy and Hillary were taking kickbacks through the Clinton Foundation for arranging to sell the uranium in Oregon to Russia. You know, it's these people have no conscience at all. But, you know, and plus they're going to destroy about a third of the state of Oregon. I was on a radio show one day, and a guy called in, and I think it was the John Moore show a number of weeks ago, and he said he was from Oregon, and he said they have basically cordoned off the entire southeast corner of the state of Oregon, where they're going to do mining, military operations, and other planned events with the state of Oregon. That's what that's all about. Anyway, okay, that's somewhat of an update, but back to Earth Day. I know kids listen to this show. I know a lot of parents have their kids listening, and you're sitting there together. We have to start informing the younger generation of what this world is really like. They have to understand what's being handed off to them. It's not lollipop and roses, you know, sugar plum fairy Earth Day, everybody's happy. No. Earth Day should be a day when we sit down and take a serious look at what's going on in this planet, and especially the youth, because your parents aren't getting it done. The youth have to step up and, you know, look at using one-third electricity. How easy could that be to literally understand what your electric footprint is and use one-third less? We could shut down all those nuclear power plants today and begin decommissioning them just by turning a light off, just by, you know, brushing your teeth without an electric toothbrush, by, you know, combining loads of wash, by, you know, having an efficient refrigerator. All of the things that could be done to start shutting down those nuclear power plants. Other things, you know, as far as recreation, you know, just across the board, it would be very easy to shut down. Industry wastes a lot of electricity. It would be very easy to shut down one-third of our electric use without hindering our progress, our ability to do what we really want to do. And, you know, you're sitting there studying, there's lights on in the house, there's a light on in the bathroom, go shut them off. And but we have to do this organized. There has to be leadership to say we're going to do this. By the way, I see that they're doing this in Venezuela. They're starting to talk about a two-day work week. They're starting to talk about conserving energy and electricity because they're realizing, but I'll tell you something, they're also able to grow food there. They're able to grow organic, non-GMO food. And those countries, even though by Western standards are not economically what we'd call sound, in the long run, those countries will be far better off because they're going to have food. They're going to have chickens and eggs and rice and other things that they grow in their country, and those people will be able to eat. Whereas in the United States, all of that corn, when you go through the planting season coming up, all of that corn that's grown in Nebraska and Iowa and Kansas and Indiana and Illinois and Minnesota and Wisconsin and some in the Dakotas, some in Colorado, all of that corn and soybeans, when it gets put in a bag, ultimately it's stamped and says not for human consumption. The United States does not grow enough food to feed itself. The majority of food, the vegetables, things like that, are coming in, and California is going by the wayside. They're unable to produce the food they did before. So literally, the United States is unable to produce real food for its population. And mix that in with a nuclear disaster, people are going to be starving. Plus, you have 50 million illegal aliens in the country. The United States is in a big problem. And whether you agree with aliens being there or not, when it comes down to having food for everybody, the problem is that there's not enough food. There's not going to be enough food. And so the way to deal with alien populations like that is to find a way that they can live in their own countries. And the United States is a great place to bring people to, but it's being very much overpopulated. The very simple solution or the very simple calculation shows that the United States right now is on the cusp of growth that India was in the 1950s. In the 1950s, India had a population of about 400 million, and that's where the population peak hits and it goes exponential. And especially when poverty sets in, the exponential rise goes even faster. Now India is dealing with billions of people within a couple decades. That's how fast the populations can rise. So the United States have a lot of problems, and they're going to have a lot of problems with food, providing sufficient food for the populations. The poorer populations expand population without bounds. And especially, it's just these are numbers. It has nothing to do with good or bad, or whether you like illegal aliens or whether you like the native population of the United States or not. It doesn't matter. These are simply numbers and statistics and realities. That if the majority of food transportation stopped at this point in time, there's not enough food in the United States to last more than a day or two without the continual resupplying from outside. So mix in a nuclear disaster and game over. So we're dealing with very severe issues here. And nobody is talking about it. That's why I'm talking about it here. Everybody's worried about who's going in whose bathroom. That's the big news today. That dominates the headlines. You know, that's the biggest news you're going to hear on the standard evening news. Not that we have over 100 nuclear power plants that are leaking. Not that it's going to take $2 to $5 billion for each one of those to be decommissioned, and they don't know what to do with the nuclear that's left over. They don't know how to take the liquids out of those storage facilities and put them in containers that will last more than 10 to 20 years, and then when everybody's forgotten about it, they start leaking, like the Hanford site in Washington. So this is what you're facing. A lot of ineptitude in political and three-letter agencies in the government, and a very dire future. And nuclear radiation, believe me, is the number one enemy. This is Jim McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.